Hey everybody, Shane Presley here, Rock Paper Podcast, to tell you about my friends over at Music Record Shop. Find them at 4191A Manchester Avenue, right over there in the heart of the Grove. Hey, come out this Friday, June 10th. They have all new music happy hour going on, 10% off any purchase, Four Hands Beer, and new records in store from Motorhead, Band of Horses, Congos, Garbage, Goo Goo Dolls, Phil Collins, The Smiths, Nas, Band of Skulls, all kinds of stuff. And then Saturday the 11th, live in store with Traveling Sound Machine. And on Sunday, live in store with Carson Mann of Scandaleros. So come out, check those events out. All of this information and more can be found on musicrecordshop.com and Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. So go over there and follow them online. Again, musicrecordshop.com.
Podcast is kind of like a radio show that's not on the radio. It's on the internet. Does that make sense?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That's also like my mom. It makes it sound more confusing, doesn't it? It sounds like this.
Yo, this is Calvin from Ursa Major, and you are tuned in to the Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast, y'all.
Hey, everybody. Shane Presley here, Rock Paper Podcast, coming to you from St. Louis, Missouri, hanging out with Calvin Tiger of Ursa Major.
Hello.
Welcome to the show, man.
Greetings. Thanks for having me.
We kind of, a lot of these start this way. Like, I've been to a point now where I've gone through a lot of my friends and things, yeah. And that's where it all started. And then it's like, I want to branch out and meet more people. And we've been friends on Facebook for a little while, and I finally decided we need to sit down and make this happen. And it took a little bit of rescheduling, but we finally got it to work out. And,
yeah, I know. My schedule's so insane.
Well, mine too, man. I've worked three jobs and trying to do the show and just everything. Yeah. It's nuts, but it's all part of the hustle. But
no, it is.
Anyway, so a lot of these I've been meeting people for the very first time, really, on the mic, and it's always exciting for me to, you know, like I said, get to meet new people and hear some new music and everything else. So.
Yeah.
So thank you for sitting down and doing the show today, man.
Well, thank you. I'm really excited to be a part of it. I'm really excited to see somebody doing this.
Yeah.
And giving people the opportunity to be a part of something like this. So that's it's a great thing what you're doing.
Oh, thanks, man. Appreciate that. Like, it's all started out of love, man. I'm a huge fan of music in general, but I love what St. Louis music has to offer. There's a...
Yeah.
A lot of super talented people out there doing stuff in town, so I just felt like there were so many people that they need to be heard, and I was going to try to do my part, and so I started blogging kind of phased out. I was like, I got kind of bored writing. I'd rather talk and let the music speak for itself, so
yeah.
I figured audio format, and then I got into podcasting, and all led to this, man, so...
I listen to podcasts pretty regularly as well. There's something about the letting a conversation go where it goes naturally.
Sure.
Once you get to places that are uncommon for an interview type thing, you know.
Yeah.
What are you doing nowadays? Plug this, plug that. No, you want to. What I like to hear, what I like listening to podcasts for, is to understand the inner workings of people's minds.
Yeah, definitely.
The reasons why they. They do the things that they do,
yeah,
and things
yeah.
of that nature.
Yeah, no, I agree. That's why I always wanted this to be like about an hour format, because mm-hmm. I feel like that's a good listening time for.
Yeah,
and but yeah, I think I enjoy those longer in depth conversations mm-hmm. compared to just getting in here like, hey, here's our song, and so
right.
yeah, I talk about it a lot. But Stern is Howard Stern's a big influence for me. And I love what he does with a long format interview
yeah.
like that. So. You know, you look at stuff like Tonight Show or whatever, all these people come on there and they tell the same quick, you know, 3-4 minute story, and then they're out the door, and it's like...
Right. And they go to the next talk show and tell
yeah,
the same story.
Right. So it's like, I like... on Stern a while ago, he had Bill Murray sat down for like an hour and a half.
Oh,
and
really?
It was like, no one else ever has ever had Bill sit for an hour and a half and tell, you know, it's just like, it's just crazy that, I mean, he's one, he's also very, like, reclusive for a celebrity, and that's,
yeah.
But yeah, to sit for an hour and a half and just get to listen to Bill Murray stories is like, it was really something special, so.
And he's quite the character, man.
Yeah.
I remember a few years back, he was doing a thing where it was like, post a photo of your house with a sign that says Bill Murray can sleep here, and then I'll come to your house and sleep
yeah,
here.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he did it.
Yeah.
And he like actually went to somebody's house and slept there.
That's, yeah, he's a weird guy, but I think it's all part of the genius, man. I mean, he's an incredibly gifted mind and a very, very funny guy. So
I have to agree with you on that.
Yeah.
About Bill.
Yeah. But yeah, man. So I guess let's start with Ursa Major.
Okay.
I fear that's so I feel that's probably a good jumping off point here. So when did the band get going?
Sure. So as I understand it, it was our guitarist Dan and the drummer Kyle each had a girlfriend, and those two girls were roommates. And so they kind of met each other through being at the same spot all the time and having conversations, found out they had a lot of the same interests. Both of them were musicians, both of them with a lot of experience as musicians and similar tastes in music. So they got together and started jamming, and Dan at the time was at Webster, and he was in a couple different musical programs, and he met Jack, who is currently at Webster, just about to finish up studying music theory or something. I never studied music, so a lot of the stuff that they talk about, that, you know, like during practice, they'll have conversations that are like, hey, will you play it on the ninth instead of on that, and like just terms that are just, I don't know, it's like, yeah, try a dissonant chord this time, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And some of these terms I've come to recognize, but they started jamming together, and I met Dan through a mutual friend of ours, and we started playing open mics together. He would play acoustic guitar, and then I would rap. So I had come from Columbia, Missouri, which has a really, really supportive underground hip-hop scene. There was even a bar that, a venue rather, that had a weekly open mic just for hip-hop, which is crazy. I don't know of any hip-hop open mics here in St. Louis.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm sure there are some where you can, and I've done it before, but this was like strictly for that.
Right.
And, well, not strictly for that. They had other acts too, but that's mostly what they had.
Sure.
And it was really great. And so when I moved back to St. Louis, after I ran out of money couch surfing and chasing music,
yeah.
Like literally had like $0, like had to borrow money to get to St. Louis.
Right.
When I got back, there was not a whole lot of opportunities, so I had to get creative with it. So I thought, you know, this guy plays guitar, sings really well. What if some of these instrumentals that have samples on them, we just translated into acoustic guitar and played some open mics? I was just hungry to be in the limelight, or hungry to be expressing myself, like putting it out there for people to cope with me. Because most of my writings come from like the things that are... It's like I vent and then make a fun creative thing out of it,
mm-hmm.
you know. And so we were doing that, and played an open mic one night, and the drummer Kyle had come up and said, you know, had watched him, was like really surprised at what I had to offer, and then they asked me to come audition for Ursa Major, and they gave me about a week's notice, and I showed up with, they sent me an instrumental, a track, an acoustic version of the first song that we ever released, which is called Dog Dog. You can find it on Bandcamp. I had all the lyrics written down to it and showed up and had it ready to go. And in that practice time, we practiced the second song, and I wrote all the lyrics like in that moment.
Wow.
It was just a creative, like the spark hit, and it just all came out. And they were like, yeah, okay,
yeah.
This works. This is the guy we want.
Yeah.
And it was kind of weird at first. I wasn't sure, okay, we got one song. I'm not sure if we can still do this like weird hip hop over emo type thing. Eventually, I called up one of my good friends who I had done some musical endeavors with in the past. His name is Derek, and he ended up playing bass for us. Mm-hmm. And thus, Ursa Major was born. We had a sixth member at the time, His name was Dylan. He played keys and had some vocal tracks. Later on in the story, though, we split ways. We parted ways. He ended up joining a couple other musical groups, a band or two, and now he lives in Kansas. But
all right.
So we've already had a lineup change. We've been together, and that was in 2014. So we're coming up on our 2-year anniversary this August.
Yeah, very cool, man.
So that's the basic story.
Yeah, and when you guys put out was that August you put out an EP?
Yes, like that, August of 2015.
Yeah,
we put out an EP titled L'Appel du Vide.
Yeah, I wasn't even gonna try that. I took a little French in school, but
it translates to the call of the void.
Okay,
which the EP is kind of like. Our experiment, our first experiment as a group, trying to figure out what we sound like and what our talents are, mm-hmm. and how we can work together, where we can, you know, it's like there's a cavern, there's a canyon, and we all want to jump down it. So it's calling to us, you know, make this, come do this.
Sure.
So that was kind of the feel we went with for it.
Yeah, I was listening... And I mean, it's very different from, you know, a lot of stuff. I mean, like you were saying how a little hip hop over emo stuff, but I was like, it seems like there's even sometimes in a songs like where it's like, you know, you got like three or four different music styles like going on at one time. Like
certainly.
It's just you know, a very, very eclectic, mixture of sounds and styles and things. And like, you know, like you'll start with like a feels like a traditional like hip hop groove going beat and stuff, and like, and then all of a sudden it'll flip and it'll be like a, you know, what I you know, a little more heavy and like hardcore kind of stuff or whatever, and you're, you know, screaming and things, and like, so it's just like there's a lot of going on, and it was interesting. I mean, like I said, it's harder for me to really to like describe it, like,
and to categorize it.
Yeah, like that's so I think that's the great thing about it. Like there's so many people out there trying to do what's already been done,
right.
And I feel like this is kind of paving something different. You know, it's paving its own way.
We certainly feel like we're doing something different, but that's not our goal.
Sure,
we just start being ourselves, and that's the best part about it is that. I mean, it feels serendipitous to have five different creative brains all on the same wavelength, but coming with such diverse backgrounds and coming into the scenario and shaping something that you can see all five of the different backgrounds, but it doesn't feel like five different things trying to be put together. It's somehow, you know, they all fit in the groove perfectly.
Yeah.
And I feel very fortunate to be a part of the group and to have met those guys.
So when you get like rapping, how's that all get going?
Yeah, so I thought it was normal to be in the shower and write a song, or to be driving and write a song. You know, when you're like cooking or doing the dishes, like when your body goes into autonomous mode, and you just start, like in my head, I'm just writing songs all the time. I thought that was normal, and I was talking to a lot of my friends about it. I was probably about 20 years old, and they're like, I never write songs. I don't play with words.
Sure.
I don't come up with metaphors and punchlines and things like that. I don't listen to... I love a great lyricist, but I'm not analyzing everything that he's doing and wondering why he did it or how he came up with it or he or she. That's not things that I do. You should put one of these songs to music. So that's what I did. I put a single song, which I believe does not exist anymore, due to computer crashes and the like. It was one song that I had written, put it over an instrumental, and showed it to a friend of mine who was really big in the hip-hop scene in Colombia. I didn't know that he was, though. And showed him, and he was like, yo, that's pretty tight. That's some cool backpack rap. Who's that? And I was like, oh, dude, that's me. He's like, no, get out of here. And I'm like, yeah, dude, that's me. He's like... And so he said, you know, you should come play a show with us in Colombia. And I was like, play a show? Come on, man. I got one song.
Right.
What am I going to do? You know what I mean? Then I have to write so many more songs. And I was turning him down. I was turning the offer down, honestly. And I had been at work one day This was over, so that was during school, probably like April, May, somewhere in there. And then over the summer, I worked at a screen shop, screen printing shop. And so I got to be a little creative there, which was nice. But I did a lot of autonomous things,
yeah.
Like just folding shirts for, you know, hours,
right.
And things like that. And he texted me and said, "Hey, well, what's the deal? You gonna play that show or not?" And there I am with one song, and I felt that was like a moment. That was like a moment that I won't ever forget. As an opportunity was knocking on the door,
sure.
And I was like, you know what? I've wanted to be on stage for so long, doing something like this. I'll do it. Whatever. I'll say yes, and then I'll force myself to write some music.
Yeah.
And I didn't even have to force myself to write any of the music. So a month later, I showed up, and my set list was like 45 minutes. And they're like, "What are you doing? This is, you get 25. You're lower on the bill." And I had no idea. You know, I hadn't played music since I was 14. I was in a punk band when I was 14, but that we played like 10 shows, and that lasted like a year,
yeah.
Maybe. And I didn't write any of the lyrics. I wrote one song, and that was it. Mm-hmm. All of our other songs were written by somebody else. So I had no clue what I was doing, and that was kind of like a shocking thing. It was like, oh, I wrote too many songs. Okay. Well, you know, next time I have a show, I got some,
sure,
diversity in my set now. And that was a weird way to come out of the gate, I think. But not necessarily weird, but certainly not how I pictured it going,
right,
down. And I got up on stage that night, and I played a show, and I never wanted to get off the stage again. I never wanted to stop,
yeah,
performing. I've got a history. My grandfather and his brother are both, they both were like long line of family of actors and theater performers, and my father was an actor. And so going into college, having been an athlete in high school, I didn't get the chance to do any acting, because the play was in the fall, which was football season, and the musical was in the spring, which was track season. And I actually had a track and field scholarship in college, so I didn't have that many opportunities really to be a part of that sort of thing. Eventually, I made my way through. I like carved some time out in my schedule, took some acting classes, got on stage. But more so than anything, I love, I feel at home.
Yeah.
There.
Yeah, I've often, I've never actually done any like theater stuff. I did a little stagehand work for some of the school plays, just helping out because I enjoyed a lot of the people that were involved in it. So, you know, it was a good excuse to hang out with them. And but I have considered, like, just for the show, I've been thinking about doing some improv work, like just to have like another, you know, muscle to, you know, or another tool for the show and thing, you know, just
absolutely
to be able to riff more with people and, mm-hmm, and everything else. Just to, so I feel like I don't know, so that'd be different. I've never really actually done anything on stage. I've done a little bit of I've been invited to do some MC work at some shows,
yeah,
like hosting some, mm-hmm, parties, but that's about it. Like, so I don't know, yeah, I've never really had that craving for to be on the stage, but I don't know. I think it'd be fun though, to get out there more, doing,
yeah,
some more stuff.
Yeah, it's certainly fun, and I think the excitement, the anxiousness I get from messing up,
yeah,
the possibility that I could make a total ass of myself.
Sure.
I don't know. Can we?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's uncensored.
Okay, cool. Yeah, making a total ass of myself.
Sure.
Kind of excites me. It's like being under pressure, and it's kind of like a challenge. How well are you going to perform?
Yeah.
Speaking of improv, though, I used to be, and I was one of the founding members, had no clue what I was doing, but was one of the first members of the improv team at my university. And by the time I graduated, we were having two or three shows a semester, each with like, I don't know how many the place would usually seat. I think it has a 199 seats, so we'd probably have 150-ish people to most of our shows. And improv was one of the best things that ever happened to me, because,
yeah,
it gave me so many more tools than I was aware that I actually,
sure,
had. It allowed me to be super sharp on my toes. And around the same time that I started taking songwriting seriously was the year before I was a senior in college, or the summer before, rather, before I was a senior in college, I started taking songwriting seriously. So coming into my senior year, just like every single day, I mean, I'll show you my notes pages in my phone. I don't have much room for anything else on my phone. I have like the bare minimum apps and the least amount of music that I feel comfortable with because my notes app takes up so much space. So I was writing every single day and being quick on my feet and then learning how to choose my words really quickly. I was doing a lot of freestyle rapping, just, you know, fun stuff, just like throwing an instrumental with my friends and just kind of like make shit up as we go. Yeah. And that made me like explode into a social like butterfly, as if I wasn't social before, because I was, but I just, at this point, I felt like I could have control over any situation, being able to work with any kind of social interaction that I was given, and being like pretty choosy and resourceful with my words.
Yeah.
It allowed a lot of opportunities. It allowed me to meet a lot of people and have a lot of really great conversations that led to opportunities and got me to the places that I've been. So it was really interesting.
Yeah, you're improv. Saying you know, like making an ass of yourself on stage or whatever like that. Like, it's reminding me of a story with I've heard other story people say it, but I could just with comedians. Like this, there was a story like this. Like, I think it was Harlan Williams or somebody, which I love his stuff.
Yeah, he's hilarious.
He was also, if anybody doesn't know Harlan, he was the police officer, or state trooper or whatever, in Dumb and Dumber that pulls him over and stuff. You know, he's been in he was also in Half Baked. Anyway, I think it was on Fallon, maybe he was even telling a story about how, like, Harlan came out and he's like, yeah, my girlfriend was hit by a bus today. And, like, you know, something like that. That's, like, totally, like, you know, crushes anything that he was going to, like, you know, to start from that, you know, it's
yeah.
like he totally brought everybody down, and then like, and he looked at it as a challenge to be able to win him back over to, you know, to make him laughing again and stuff.
Yeah.
So it's like, and it was, I thought that was something interesting, you know, like to, he like purposely like sabotage his own show just to challenge himself to build it back up to where, you know, so,
yeah, the creative brain, man.
Yeah. So anyway, I was just thinking like that, like, you know, like you, like you're saying, you make. You know, maybe you go out there and you know, you make an ass, like you said, or whatever, but then, like, you win them over by, you know, digging yourself up out of that hole and things, so...
Yeah, it's certainly... That's part of it,
yeah.
I think. I mean, I've never sabotaged my own show.
Well, yeah, but I'm just...
But it's that same feeling of excitement of, you know, it feels like there's a lot of high stakes.
Yeah.
When you're on stage, because all eyes are on you.
Right.
I mean, if you do anything on stage... Somebody's got a camera nowadays.
Yeah.
It's probably, whatever you do on stage is probably going to be recorded. It's probably going to be posted somewhere.
Sure.
And that just raises it, but yeah, having all eyes on you and forcing yourself to perform under pressure is exciting for me.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah. So what lyricist or writers that were you, you know, like guys that you really got into on in hip hop and stuff and.
Yeah,
or is it?
It's weird. I don't feel like I have any one in particular.
Yeah.
If I had to narrow it down, if I had to say two specific people, I think that if you were to combine them, it would be a very good description of me as a lyricist. Adam Lazzara, the singer of Taking Back Sunday,
okay.
The way he uses words, and then. And metaphors, and it's really emotional, kind of whiny too. I'm a little bit that way. No shame. And then Eminem's ability to rhyme words and tell a story and be visual with and creative with his storytelling and with his words.
Yeah.
I always feel like I'm doing a bad job if I don't have at least two words in the same line that rhyme.
Right.
See what I did there.
Yeah, Eminem is like, it's just crazy with some of his. If you break down like what he's writing and what especially in the patterns and things like.
Yeah.
And it's nuts how complex like it. It might you know, to an untrained ear, maybe it just sounds like, you know, a song, but if you analyze it all, like, it's nuts how much he fits into into a beat and a line and everything else. So
yeah, Urson Majors, we're in the process of recording a new album, an LP, and one of the songs, just to show what I mean with the mixture of Taking Back Sunday and Eminem, one of the lines in one of our newer songs, and we've been performing this one too, is "We were intertwined like tie-dye, similar to her sheets. When we slept, she kept me at peace. No demons would breathe at twilight." So it's the same, like, emotional situation of strong attachment to somebody, but also multiple rhymes within lines, and I don't know what pattern that is. I didn't study poetry or anything like that, but just knowing, it just feels better to have things like that. I oftentimes think of words and songwriting in my head as, like, this is kind of silly, but you know, at the Olympics, the, like, ribbon dancing?
Yeah.
It's kind of like, if those ribbons were words, how can you, like, make, like, a, you know, if you spin it, it looks like a circle, or if you yank it this way really slowly and then bring it back with a jerk, you know, how does that look visually? And oftentimes I feel like that's the way that I try to go for writing, and the way I use my words physically on my tongue and things like that.
Yeah, that's interesting, man. And, there was a video surfaced the other day on Facebook and stuff. It was shared around a couple people I know, and it was like, it was like all about hip hop and lyricists and all that stuff. So it was like, and it broke down, like, how many, the different patterns and things, analyzed, like, different rappers and their styles and how
started with MF Doom.
There was and then it went to B.I.G. and all these guys, but some of these guys have a very complex rhythm pattern and stuff, and especially with the rhyming multiple things in a line, and like you're saying, and it's just like, it was very interesting to hear about all this stuff. And it's like, again, it's like some stuff you just kind of take for granted. You don't just, like, oh, that's a catchy song or whatever.
Right.
But it's like when you realize what the words that these guys are putting in there and the thought process of it all and how complex it really truly is. Like, it's just like, it's something, it's a piece of art for sure. So
if I can recall, there was a line that they analyzed that was literally a triple punchline.
Yeah.
And I don't remember, I can't recall what the line was exactly, but I do know that when I heard it, I, like, my brain splattered against the wall.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I was just like, whoa,
yeah,
that's crazy. Like, that's so incredibly intelligent and talented. And,
sure.
The thought behind that, it's, yeah, when that moment happens, it's pretty incredible.
Yeah. So, yeah, I forget what the site or page, whoever that was that did that, but that, if anybody hasn't seen that, go check that out. It was a really... especially if you like that kind of stuff. So
I think you can find it if you search like MF Doom Analyzed.
Yeah, something like whatever.
Yeah, that's
like that.
I remember his name was in the title.
Yeah. But yeah, they and that's why I like a lot of that. I don't know. I just feel like some of that's kind of lost in a lot of rap and hip hop today. Like, I know there are people still doing things like that, but. You know, you look at what is on the radio and stuff. Like, I don't feel like a lot of the most popular ones are really doing that. You know, it's like, it's, I don't know.
Well, I think that what has come to happen is that what's on the radio isn't most people. I think for most people, it's just background music.
Yeah.
And so you can sell a million records without having said a single line that makes sense.
Right.
You don't have to say anything thought-provoking or provocative or anything that reaches you emotionally to sell a record.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's true. I mean, there's instrumental music.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of music that doesn't have lyrics that can touch people emotionally, but I think for the majority of people, since the internet has been well established as a regular part of our lives, I think that the majority of radio music is probably just background music. And of course, the lyrics get stuck in your head. They're catchy, so you sing along, so you know some of the lyrics. I mean, I used to work at a top 40 radio station, actually.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, and I would know all the words to all these songs, and I would hear it some other time when I'm not at work and know all the words and just recognize that I know these words, but I've never once put a thought into what they mean, what they stand for, what the songwriter is trying to communicate. Never once. Yet I know all the words.
Right.
And that's, you know, then I started to not be so mad at the music industry for what's being put out, because I know that it's a business.
Yeah.
And everyone's just trying to make a dollar.
Sure.
And I don't think that anyone's particularly holding back the good stuff. I just think that what's shitty is easier to gain access to. And it's easier to control those people. Like a lot of the hip hop guys, they write their own lyrics, which is not common in top 40. You know, most top 40 artists have a team of writers.
Yeah.
So these hip hop artists are writing their own songs. They came up from a place where they don't have millions of dollars. I mean, I don't know any rapper that started out with $1 million, you know?
Right.
And they, you know, are promised so much money, and then why wouldn't you say something a little bit differently for $1 million? Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You can't be mad at them.
I'd sell out if somebody wants to pay me $1 million. So.
Right, exactly.
So.
But for the record, just say that I wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
I had this conversation last night, and then we'll change topics. I had this conversation last night with a good friend of mine of what would be your line? What line would you draw? Or where would the line be that you draw that says, okay, I no longer want to work with this label or this these people that are supporting me? Like, what would be the fine line?
Sure.
And it was, I think that when music stops becoming fun,
yeah,
when it starts to feel like I don't enjoy it,
right,
whatever they're doing that's making it that way, like if I feel like I'm not expressing myself or I'm not being honest, then I think that's where I draw the line.
Sure. No, I totally agree, man. I people ask me about the show and stuff, and that's what I say too, is like, I don't know when this show's gonna end or whatever. I'm just having a great time doing it, and I'm gonna keep doing it as long as it's still fun. So
yeah.
But making the joke about selling out, like, I mean, if Walmart wanted to pay me $1 million to sponsor the show, I think I would take it. But you know, it's like you also have to think about like that as in that terms, like where, yeah, when do we want to say, draw the line where we, what we represent and stuff, and like,
yeah,
and who we associate with and things. But I don't know. So anyway, but yeah, I agree. It's you don't want to, I don't want to ever like lose myself in whatever, yeah, you know, lose the focus of what this is and what, you know, your music is and everything else. So obviously you want to be true to yourself and what you feel. So yeah, man, I agree. I totally get it.
If you reference our song Jackson, there's a line in there where I say, and I feel 100% this way, and I've always felt this way, and I don't think this will ever change. Don't let paper become the mayor, no matter how bad I want to be inside your CD player. And it's just like, I can't let money rule me.
For sure. Yeah. You're not just a lyricist or a musician in Ursa Major, but you're very heavily involved in a lot of things. Right? You're like, you're all over the place, it seems like. With,
you know, yeah. No, I definitely feel like I'm all over the place, and my schedule's insane. Like,
yeah.
I try to make sense of it, but it's nuts. So a few things. So there's Ursa Major, and then we have a side project called Dialogue, which is in the same vein as if Front Bottoms and Weezer had some kind of weird baby, it would be along the lines, sure, of like kind of I don't know how you would say that, I guess like emo, not emo in the sense of like the Used and My Chemical Romance, but emo in the sense of what it is today. It's just like emotional music. So we have that side project, and then I've been playing with a group called, we call ourselves Tom Joad and the Ghosts. It's a Rage Against the Machine tribute band. We've played some shows over the last year or so. And then, of course, I've got my solo music, which has really taken a backseat since I've been in Ursa Major, and I like it that way. I like Ursa Major a lot more than I like my solo stuff. Yeah. It's a lot more fun being in a group situation. A collaboration is a lot better. But then, on the flip side, my profession, I'm a videographer and photographer. And what that allows me to do is become involved in a lot of the same circles, but from a different angle. So last night I shot for So Far Sounds. Are you familiar with So Far?
Yeah, I've just recently just started discovering some, like, they're like pop-up shows, I guess, in different neighborhoods. And
yeah, so it's, they're secret shows, and you apply, and you know, be the first to apply because they sell out pretty quick. Yeah. Usually it's about 100 people. Sometimes we have up to 200 people. It just depends on the location. Location is always different. And the whole idea, it's songs from a room. So it's always a space that's not conditioned for music. You'll probably never, ever see a So Far show at a venue of any sort. So the one we were at last night is that was at Tech Artista in the Central West End.
Yeah, I was there the other night for a recording.
Oh, were you?
Yeah, I was doing a podcast over there.
So. Nice. So you're familiar, but for those that haven't, who don't know what it is, it's like a thinkubator for small business owners. It's just a place to have an office.
Yeah.
You can rent out, a place to kind of let your mind wander and do things like that. So we were filming there last night, and I've gotten the opportunity to work with a lot of different musicians, doing music videos, live concerts, some photo shoots, things like that. And it's really great. I love it. I love what I do, and I love almost all the things that I do on a regular basis. I just love it.
Yeah.
All of it, like making music and writing and shooting and helping and out in the community in different ways, networking. I've been getting my hands a little bit into booking shows, more so like connecting people to St. Louis that are trying to get here, just because I know a lot of people from these different avenues that I've taken through my creative endeavors. I've met a lot of people, and why not just share?
Yeah.
You know, the more the merrier.
Yeah, I get that a little bit. People like will say, hey, I got friends trying to come to town. You know, can you suggest a venue or, you know, a band they can jump on a show with and different things. So, yeah, I try to connect the dots for a lot of people, too. It's fun.
Yeah, no, I love it. Especially when there's, like, a band that we got to help out very early on in their career is a band called Microwave. And Microwave is great. So they're on tour and had an open date somewhat in our area. Like, they would be kind of in the direction that they were going, you know. And they're looking for a show, and we love their music. So we hit them up and said, hey, play at the demo with us on that day. We'll play a show, and we'll bring some bands, and we'll do it. And we did it. And they didn't have a place to sleep. We offered them a place to crash. They ended up driving through the night, which is totally normal. But that's kind of like the whole thing is, here's a place to stay. We'll give you whatever it is that you need. Mm-hmm. You know, you'll have a shower. You'll have a warm meal. And they came back through on tour again. Same thing. But this time there was a much bigger tour. They were playing with some different bands where they weren't the headliners or they weren't touring by themselves. And, you know, when saw them outside, and they're like, hey, Calvin, what's up? And I was like, oh, man, they remembered me. That's so cool. I really feel a sense of, I felt their gratitude. Even though they didn't stay, mm-hmm. I just felt their gratitude. And that made me happy, helping somebody out like that. You know?
Yeah.
And so connecting the dots, like you were saying, is a fun thing to do. And I've been thinking about maybe hosting shows, because I've been hosting comedy shows at Pops.
Oh, yeah.
For like, I've done two of them, so it hasn't been a lot, but both of them were like Trailer Park Boys themed. So the first one was Randy and Leahy, and then the second one was Sam the Caveman that came through, and that was just super easy and a lot of fun to get up there and host the show. So that kind of put in my head the idea that I could probably book shows. I could do like a small, I probably wouldn't call like a production or anything like that, you know what I mean? But I could probably get a handful of people from over here and over here to play a show together, and then I'll just MC it, and it'll be a great show and have a lot of great bands on it. And the main idea I wanted to do is I wanted to take genres that have one thing in common and then have them all in a show together to expose each individual group's fan base to something similar, but in a new direction for them.
Yeah, for sure.
I got that idea from how often people want to book Ursa Major with a hip hop group, and while we're all down for that, hip hop in St. Louis is different than like if they wanted to book us with a hip hop group in Columbia, just because I know the Columbia scene. I know that a hip hop group there might show up with a band. but in most circles in St. Louis, that's not the case.
Yeah.
So what I wanted to do was I wanted to book a show that was a guy named Dylan Brady, Mastermind from the group MME, Loop Rat, and Ursa Major, all in one bill. And I thought that that would be a really exciting, I don't know how it would turn out. I thought it would be a really exciting experience, mm-hmm. though. Because it's the one thing that we would all have in common is the MC aspect. And kind of the vibe, I guess, feels similar.
Yeah.
I know, vibe is such a... I feel like I use it... I saturate that word because if there's something that that's intangible and I can't describe it, I call it a vibe. You know, being on the same wavelength or... The atmosphere feels good when these groups are in the same room type of feel.
Yeah, there's a lot to that. Like, it's hard to sometimes fully describe or, you know, articulate, but there's something unspoken, a connection that happens when our, you know, creativity inspires creativity,
mm-hmm.
or you know, these just artists in similar wavelengths and things and. Or even the fans and stuff. I mean, there's a certain connection that happens. You know, it's like I said, it's why I like doing this show in person instead of like over the internet or anything. You know, there's a podcast over Skypes and all that and things like that. So, but it's like there's something happens chemically in the brain and things that when we're all working together like that. So.
Yeah, eye contact is super important for a solid conversation.
Yeah, no, I totally get it, man. So yeah, if you call it vibes or whatever you call it, but I mean, it's something. You know, there's definitely something to it, though.
That was the goal, is to start doing genre bending shows like that.
Yeah,
I think there's easily enough talent. I mean, you could even throw a band like Illphonics on there.
They're so good.
There's so much talent in our city, and I know that there's not this much talent in most cities, because I've been to a lot of other cities, and even a place like Columbia that fosters music, like there's 19,000 venues in a tiny little city. You can play any night of the week, there's absolutely live music, and that whole like downtown is the size of like Del Mar and the Grove if they were together. You know what I mean? It's not that big.
Right.
And there's still light years more talent in our city. I think a lot of that comes from, there's a lot of turmoil and from pain, art will flourish.
Yeah.
I mean, we have a lot of pain in our city.
Sure.
And I think that might be one of the reasons why we have so much talent, so much passion. Our city has so much passion for the arts. Last night I met a guy named, I'm not even going to try to pronounce his last name, but his first name is Frederico. He's touring from Mexico through the United States playing his music, which is really emotional, instrumental piano pieces. And he said the vibe that he gets from St. Louis, he said, it's like L.A. without the judgment.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a really great compliment, because that's one thing that people all across probably the world, but of the people I know, they hate about that city is they love it for the creative endeavors, but they hate the people.
Yeah.
Or the attitudes rather than the people. But
yeah.
And so I thought that was a fantastic compliment and really does a good job of describing our city.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's pretty fair. A pretty fair assessment.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. I don't know. Like I love this city, obviously that's what, you know. But it's like, I want to tell everybody about everything that's great, but then it's also kind of like, it's also kind of nice having your own little secret sometimes, and where it's like, you know, because you know, like, when everybody finds out about it, it's not going to be the same, and
it'll be exploited.
Sure. So it's like, I want my friends to be successful in the music and do all those things, but it's also, sometimes it's kind of nice to go to those shows when there's only, you know, 100 people or whatever there compared to the pageant or what, you know, I mean, I love the pageant, but I mean, we're saying it's like, it's just so on. So,
that's why I love working for So Far.
Yeah.
And that's why I also, Ursa Major's going on tour next week. We leave on the 12th and we come back on the 19th. So we'll be gone for 7 days. And four of our eight shows Wait, how many days are we? That's 7 days. Four of our six shows are going to be house shows, I'm pretty sure. No, three of our... Six shows, 7 days. Yeah, half and half. Three house shows, three venues. And I'm honestly looking more forward to the house shows and sure. the venues because of the intimacy.
Yeah, no,
and where I write from is like a place of like vulnerability.
Yeah,
and being intimate is important for that.
Yeah, house shows are very cool. I mean, I'd like to get involved in more of them. I know I listen to a lot of singer songwriters and stuff. Mm-hmm. So like at those that a house show setting is great for that. I mean, even even mentioned so far and stuff. I saw a video of River Kittens in a living room doing some stuff. So, yeah. Like, you know, things like that. Like, it's just like those are they're perfect for that kind of a setting. Like, it's just a, you know, but yeah, I agree. And it's, I think house shows are gonna or something really cool. If you're not involved in any of those, get out and try to find wherever you can. But
I'll even mention some off for you.
Yeah,
find these venues, quote unquote. I'm doing the finger quotes, the air quotes. Find these venues on Facebook. Metal Gear. The Hobbit Hole. Madame Zambo's House of Voodoo. There's a few others that I can't think of off the top of my head.
Yeah.
I know we've played that.
Well, so you said Hobbit Hole June 6th.
Yes, this coming Monday, June 6th. We're playing at Hobbit Hole. We're playing with a band called Blue Healer. That's from Kansas City. We're playing with another band. Oh, shoot. I hate when this happens. They have a really hilarious name. It's a play on words. It's not this, but it's like Steve Buscemi's skate shoes or some silly name like that. It sounds really intriguing, really enticing, and we're playing with a couple other St. Louis bands.
Okay,
it's a lot of fun.
Yeah,
and that's at the Hobbit Hole. Yeah,
yeah,
on Monday.
So. Yes, come out to that. I'm sure everything's online.
Right? Yeah.
They can.
Yeah, yeah. Also, all our music is online. It's on iTunes and Spotify. But if you search Ursa Major on Spotify, it might be a little difficult to find us. There's a few other people. We've been in a couple little discrepancies about who gets the rights to the name Ursa Major.
Yeah.
There was a band in the UK about 5 years ago that was really popular with that name, and they broke up, and we contacted them and asked permission, like, hey, can we use this? Are you guys planning on using it? If not, we're going to. And they did. And so we started using it, and then we tried to make a band camp, and there's like five Ursa Majors. And then we tried to make an email, there's like five Ursa Majors.
Sure.
So we ended up having to find a couple ways around it for this and that. But I think, though, for the most part, we're the most active or popular.
Yeah,
Ursa Majors.
I think I googled Ursa Major Bandcamp, and you were the first one to pop up. So, nice. Like, that's
good to know.
Yeah, right. So yeah, definitely get out there. The tunes are free on Bandcamp. Is that right?
Free on Bandcamp. So go get them from there. You might have to put in your email address.
Yeah,
but that doesn't hurt.
Sure.
And then if you can pay for it on iTunes, you can listen on Spotify, and we'll be paid at the end of the year from Spotify, like $1.50.
Right.
So we're not really sticklers on making money on that. Yeah. However, while we're on tour, we'll have some merch, we'll have some CDs. We'd like to sell all of those to help fund the tour.
Yeah, need some gas money.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We're going to... It's going to start in Oklahoma City, then Tulsa, Lawrence, Kansas, Mount Olive, Illinois, DeKalb, Illinois, Minneapolis, and then Rochester, Indiana is our last one. We're playing... This might be the one that I'm most excited for. We're playing in a barn in the middle of nowhere with two other touring bands.
Nice.
And I was like, no locals. That's... Because in St. Louis, we have so much music, so much opportunity.
Yeah.
You have to put locals on to get anyone to show up to a non-existent... Or a band that's not popular or well-known.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess in this city, or in this town, this one house venue, this barn, puts on touring acts all the time. And since there's nothing going on, it packs. It, like,
sure.
fills the place.
Yeah, I mean, I think if things are promoted right, and you build a reputation by constantly providing great entertainment, you know, people are going to respond. You know, they're always and that's kind of, I want to get to that level. Like, that's kind of my goal, is like, I want to, because I've would love to own a venue someday. I would love to somehow take this show and make it, you know, a venue and have great bands all the time, and a mix, like, again, like what you're saying, mixing genres and bringing in comedy and doing all kinds of different things. All, but I want to, because it's all stuff I'm very passionate about. So, but yeah, like I think that's all it is, man. It's like, if people act like, because I want to do something out. I live on Wentzville. I want to do something more that way, because there's just not
enough. There. Yeah. All the bands out there, they play in St. Louis.
Yeah.
There's not much opportunity in the St. Charles area. Everything's copy and pasted from somewhere else. There's not a whole lot of originality.
People tell me it's a bad idea because it'll fail out there or whatever, and I'm like, I think if, like, again, if I provide great entertainment and promote it right, and I guess, and you get these people in and they have a great time, they go tell two friends,
right,
and so on.
Well, I'm sure you remember the Midwest Music Pit.
Sure,
right there in Wentzville. I, from what I understand, that went under because of management reasons, but I mean, every time I was there, which is probably twice a month, it was packed, like in one in, one out type thing. So I think Wentzville, I mean, it's booming so quickly. Sure. I think the whole St. Charles County area is hungry. I think the artists out there are hungry for something to come along, to give them opportunities so that they don't have to drive 45 minutes to an hour to every single gig. We're lucky we live down here. I mean, We drive 10 minutes. Like, if we play in Grove, when I leave my house, it's a 4-minute drive.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I can leave late and get there early.
Yeah.
It's just,
sure.
You know. Yeah. But I do need to, I gotta go, you know, I'm a human being and I'm looking at an apartment later today.
Yeah, right.
So I need to
We gotta
wrap up.
And then one last thing, we got Barnfest.
Yes.
You guys are involved in that, right?
Yes. Barnfest is this festival that happens 3 times a summer on someone's property that has a barn. And basically what it is a place where many, many people and bands and other artists come together from the St. Louis area. There's a lot of people from Alton, a lot of people from that side of the river, a lot of people from St. Charles, north and south. And from what I understand, it's going to be in Troy from now on. It used to be in Pacific, but now it's going to be in Troy, Missouri, which is great for the St. Charles bands, right?
Sure, yeah.
You know, 20, 30 bands a day. It's like $3 to get in. And it, a lot of times, if you don't have the $3, okay, just come on in and have fun. You know, the main rule is everyone love each other and be respectful. And other than that, it's BYOB, and everyone usually camps out.
Yeah.
And so the music will go into the evening, and then there'll be like a big bonfire party afterwards. It's like a musician's most ideal scenario, playing out under the stars and having a lot of people there, people that are listening to you, that are there to hear the local music, the little guys, the new bands, and give feedback and then party.
Yeah.
So it's perfect.
Sure. Yeah.
So July 16th is the next one. That's Barnfest 9, and then October 1st is Barnfest 10, which is going to be Halloween themed.
Oh, nice.
So that'll be a lot of fun. The last one we played at was Barnfest 7, and it was since Star Wars 7 came out that same summer, it was called The Fest Awakens instead of The Force Awakens, and it was Star Wars themed. So there was like people dressed up as Jedi's playing their set, and you know, one guy was there's a hip hop artist that was dressed as a Sith Lord, and he was just doing his whole set as like the Emperor.
Yeah.
So it's really great. Barnfest is one of the best things that's happened to me.
Yeah, very cool. Yeah, I'm gonna try to get out and get involved in that. It sounds like a good time to me.
There's a documentary on YouTube called Barn Film that Luca Toretta and I put together. To try to spread the awareness of Barnfest.
Yeah, man.
So that's the perfect example of bringing my two worlds together.
Yeah, that's did you do the you guys did a video for Bridges?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did that.
You did that?
Yeah. So myself and Derek, our bass player, we came up with the concept, but I shot all of the scenes except for when I was on camera. He shot that. And then I did all the editing. And that was about 20 hours of editing on that video.
Awesome. Yeah, it looks good, man. I'm I'll be sure to attach it to this, and then people can check that out. And
awesome.
Check
great.
Out some major tunes. And,
yeah, we'd appreciate that.
Yeah. Can we answer these questions
yeah.
from the fans?
Yeah.
You got I put your picture up on Facebook. I enjoy getting a little fan participation. And Anthony wanted to ask you if he remembers the first show he did with Con Man Economy. More specifically, did he like the Midget Burlesque act?
Yes, I remember that show.
Yeah.
It was one of those variety shows I told you about. And I do remember the Midget Burlesque act because her name was Spirit, and that's not a name that's not a person that you forget. You see her, she was very, very social, always hitting on everybody, and such a lovely presence. She's passed away now,
uh-huh.
so rest her soul. But it was interesting to see a small person doing burlesque, because burlesque is really titillating, you know, it's really exciting. And really sexual, and but she's like has features of a child. So I was like, this is I don't like this.
Yeah.
I don't like to watch because I feel like I'm watching, I feel like I'm sexualizing in a weird way.
Yeah.
And I don't like that.
All right.
But I don't like feeling that way. It's
sure.
weird. However, you know, she's like 30.
Yeah.
She's like 30 years old. So it wasn't actually weird. Just very strange.
Yeah.
Very unique. Not a common scenario that I find myself in. That's
yeah.
for sure.
Yeah. and Blake asked, ask him how passion and motivation has helped him get here.
Well, I think those two things go hand in hand. That's a great question. I think Blake and I are very similar. It's Blake Boyster, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've had
City
a couple
of Parks.
City of Parks. Yeah, I've had a few conversations with him, and usually we end up on this topic. And passion, I think, without passion, you don't find happiness. I know that to be true. Everything that I do without passion, I hate.
Yeah.
Like, I just can't stand it. I hate doing it. And motivation has been one of my favorite feelings. I believe in the power of the secret. Are you familiar with the secret? The law of attraction. We don't really have the time to explain
yeah,
it all the way.
That's next one. Then.
Yeah. We can talk about that. And basically, I'll have these moments where I feel incredibly motivated and excited for my future or somebody else's future, and I'm drawn, like, you know, you watch movies and they have, or TV shows, and there's like the dad that's never around because he's always busy at work. He's always busy working, and he never comes home. And like in Hook, he'll never hang up his phone. He's always on his
right.
phone. I feel the same way about the things that I'm passionate about. I'm like, sorry guys that I had to blow you off, but I'm really passionate about this thing, and I just had to dive in and get to it.
Yeah.
And get in there. So they've gotten me. Those two things have gotten me everywhere that I've been.
Sure, man. Yeah. I think that's really all you need. You know, if you believe in it and you're passionate, there's nothing, you know, the possibilities are really endless. So
yeah.
Well, cool. So find Ursa Major on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Grab the tunes at iTunes and Bandcamp, Spotify. You can and all that. So, but yeah, man, this has been a lot of fun. I appreciate you taking some time out.
I love it. When I get my video podcast up and running, I'll have you come on.
All right.
We'll
trade. There you go. And then June 6th, Hobbit Hole. Come see Ursa Major there. Catch him on tour in any of the shows in those towns we mentioned. Or if you got some friends in those towns, tell them to come out to the show.
Please.
And I'll...
We'll high-five them and hug them.
Yeah, definitely. Free high-fives for everyone. So, all right. Thanks, Calvin.
Thanks, Shane. Appreciate it. Peace out, Girl Scouts.
Thank you. who needs it? When you're high like me, I'm half asleep, I'm having a dream. I'm riding on the sky using time as ink. As my plane descends, I hope my headache ends. The sunlight sends vibes right through my lens. My friends keep me grounded like when my flight ends. Music is my medicine, the rhythm is my etiquette. My home is where your heart is. And as sure as I'm breathing, ain't no reason I would let go. Chasing lines, you dance around the corners of my mental. You restore my faith in the future and put my head up on a pedestal. You invaded my bands and you filled them with life. You invaded my friends and you filled them with lights.
Where I come from, we build bridges over mine. I've given you everything I could ever give someone. Where I come from, we build bridges over mine. I've given you everything I could ever give someone.
Where I'm from, we own mass stronger than bones. And we're clever whenever we show them. And that's a fallacy, to say that I haven't tried or put in the time to see your galaxy. I'm reaching out from my balcony. This mic is a brush, the world is a canvas. One that I can't touch, but I can't rush what sand does. Your love is a crutch, one that I can't trust. This can't be the last of our stanzas.
Rock, 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 rock,